deforestation and trade policy are coming together in some new and controversial ways. In June of 2023, the European Union's brand new deforestation regulation entered into force.
The European Union is taking a huge step forwards when it comes to tackling environmental destruction. After the European Parliament voted on Wednesday to ensure that products on the EU market are deforestation free.
So the products covered will be coffee, cocoa, wood, cattle, palm oil, soya, and also any products that are fed by or used by those things, such as leather from the cows, chocolate from the cocoa, furniture from the wood, that type of thing.
The deforestation regulation applies to products sourced not only from European countries, but to goods imported from all over the world. It's not just the deforestation regulation. The EU's recent trade deal with Brazil and other Mercosur countries has not yet been implemented, in part because of Europe's concerns over deforestation of the Amazon. The European Union is not alone. Concerned with deforestation, the United States has also recently blocked imports and threatened tariffs on Peru and Vietnam over illegal logging. This episode explores the economic linkages between deforestation and trade in agricultural products. Is more farm trade good or bad for the fight against deforestation? When it comes to this part of climate change, how do the trade policy details matter? To tackle all of this, I will be joined by a very special guest.
Farid Farrokhi, Purdue University, currently visiting Princeton University.
Farid Farrokhi is an economics professor at Purdue University and a Kedden Fellow at Princeton University. He is an expert on agricultural trade, and Farid has a brand new paper on the trade-offs associated with farming, deforestation, and exports that he's going to share with us today. Hi, Farid.
Hi, Chad.
You are listening to an episode of Trade Talks, a podcast about the economics of trade and policy. I'm your host, Chad Bown, the Reginald Jones Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. Farid, to begin, describe for us some of the details of the world's deforestation problem.
Between 1990 and 2020, the global forest area fell by 7%. To put this number in context and to show how big it is, that's about the size of a country like Argentina, or four times the size of Texas. However, experiences of countries in terms of deforestation have been vastly different. For example, in tropical areas, forest area that we have lost has been enormous. In Brazil and Congo, we have lost more than 15% of their forest cover in this period between 1990 and 2020. In Indonesia, that's been about 25%. These are big numbers. However, the rate of deforestation in some other countries have been lower. And more importantly, some countries experienced reforestation, meaning that forest area increased in these other regions, including China and parts of Europe.
Are all forests the same when it comes to climate change and carbon capture? If one country loses a forest and another country plants trees to reforest an area of the same size, do these changes just cancel each other out?
When it comes to climate change and carbon emissions, not all forests are alike. The reason is because the amount of carbon that forests hold or store per hectare of land is also vastly different between different types of forests. Tropical forests, like the ones in Brazil or Congo Basin or Indonesia, they are much more important for storing and capturing carbon from the atmosphere. So that means that cutting down trees in the Amazon is going to be 3 to 4 times more important than the boreal forest, for example, in Russia.
Why is the Amazon, a tropical forest in Brazil, so much more important for the climate than a forest in Russia or Europe or the United States?
In the US, when we go hiking in woods or forest, we typically find our way because there is enough room for us to walk. However, in the Amazon, that's almost impossible to do. The reason is because per hectare of land, there are many more trees. The trees tend to be thicker or taller, and it's not just the carbon-based biomass above the ground, but also it is the carbon that is stored below the ground, like the roots that store carbon there. The implication is that it is not just about the total forest that we have lost, but also what type of forest we have lost, whether it is in tropical areas or in the boreal forests that are less dense in carbon.
The next thing I want to talk about is agriculture, or food. At the risk of asking a super silly question, why is agriculture so important?
Agriculture is important because we all need food. And the thing is that these days, particularly in rich countries, we take food for granted because it is just so easily available to every one of us. However, if you look at other countries that are much poorer than a country like the US, or if you put this into some historical perspective, then we see that hunger, famine, and food security have been big issues. So from 1950 to 2000, the world population increased more than double. However, agricultural area increased by about 25% only. What really was the force that was at play was the increase in agricultural productivity, our ability to produce more with less, meaning that if I have one unit of land, with that unit of land, now I can produce much more.
Over that 50-year period, the second half of the 20th century, how did the world start getting so much more food without using up as much land?
There are a number of reasons that this happened, all related to technological improvements in agriculture, the use of fertilizers, better seeds, irrigation systems, and so on, that made us able to produce more outputs with the same amount of land. This episode of history sometimes is referred to as the Green Revolution. And a figure who is very important here to mention is Norman Borlaug, who was an American agronomist. And he was very influential in developing high-yield varieties like the ones in wheat and taking them to developing countries, countries such as Mexico or India back in the time, in order to fight against global hunger. For his contributions to Green Revolution, Norman Borlaug, in fact, won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970.
If Norman Borlaug and the Green Revolution solved this problem, why then is this still an issue today?
Today is even worse. The reason is, number one, we still face the growing population problem. We are at 8 billion people now, and then UN projection sets the world population at around 10 billion by 2050. That means 25% more people, so at minimum, we need 25% more food. At the same time, reason number two, we face the issue of climate change. So if we keep cutting forest in order to expand agricultural land so that we can produce more food to satisfy the global demand, then we are going to lose more forest. But these forests around the world are so valuable in capturing carbon and help the issue of climate change. If you put these two reasons together, growing population and climate change, then how we are going to satisfy the global demand for food is going to be ever more important.
That takes us to your research, which is going to help the world understand the trade-offs associated with global food production on the one hand and stopping deforestation and climate change on the other. How do you start?
We may think that we are in a flat world, that we are at the peak of globalization. There is some good truth in that in manufacturing goods. Many of them we have by means of imports, like the laptop or the cell phone that you might have. However, in agriculture, there can be a lot more trade than currently it is. There are a lot of trade barriers in the agriculture sector. And it's not just one country. It's many countries we are talking about. These are import tariffs, quotas, export bans, domestic subsidies. All forms of protection in agriculture are prevalent around the world. These large trade barriers in agriculture mean that if they are removed or if they go down, then we are going to have a lot more trade in agriculture. What we are going to do in our research is examining the question of what the implication would be from having a lot more trade in agricultural products for deforestation and climate change.
The world does not have as much trade in farm products as it could. Border barriers in farm products remain extremely high in most countries. Not all of them, but most of them. If countries around the world reduce those barriers, stopping trade, what do our basic models of international trade suggest would happen?
When countries open up to trade, then each country is going to do more of what the country is good at and less of what the country is not good at. Basically, we are saying that each country is going to produce more in the industry in which it has a comparative advantage. So if you have a comparative advantage in agriculture, meaning that you are relatively good in producing agriculture, then you are going to expand your production of agriculture and export to others. And if it's the other way around, then you're going to import from others. Overall, what we learn from basics of trade theory is that we end up having a more efficient allocation of production around the world. And so there are going to be efficiency gains from trade. And so the world is going to be able to produce more food.
Opening up to international trade means more food production overall. That helps deal with the global problem of food insecurity. Yet, we also know from the experience of getting rid of trade barriers for manufactured goods that opening up to trade means the world will change. Who produces what will change? Who farms what will change? What do these sorts of changes mean for deforestation?
It depends. If opening up to trade means more farming in your country, that may translate to deforestation, so less forest for you. If it means less farming for you, that may mean that you are gaining forest. Now, remember that not all types of forests are the same. Some of them are denser in the amount of carbon that they hold, and some of them are less dense. So the details of where deforestation is going to happen becomes important.
And keeping track of the details of where the deforestation takes place is something you emphasize in your formal economic model. Earlier, you mentioned Norman Borlaug, the Nobel Peace Prize winning agronomist, who was such an important part of the Green Revolution in the 20th century. Why is some of his work so relevant for your research?
What Norman Borlaug had in mind, now we call it Borlaug's hypothesis, is that when agricultural productivity increases, then we may end up saving forests. That may sound a bit counterintuitive, so let me put it into some context. Let me first explain what I mean by agricultural productivity. We mean that with one unit of land, like with 1 hectare of land, how much output of rice or wheat or soybean you can produce. So we call this yield. And yields can go up in different ways. For example, if you have better seeds or fertilizers and pesticides or also some farm machinery like tractors, then you can boost your yield. So one way that you can increase your agricultural productivity is by means of international trade. For example, suppose you are a farmer in Brazil. Then when Brazil opens up to trade, then you can have better access to fertilizers that the country imports, pesticides, farm machinery, also some agricultural equipment like tractors or combines that you can use to increase your agricultural productivity.
Borlaug's hypothesis was that more productive farming could actually save the world's forests and help the climate. One way to improve farm productivity is through trade, importing inputs like fertilizers, pesticides, seeds, and farm equipment, and learning about better techniques of farming that may be generated in other countries. Now let's turn to the farming country's exports, because that is going to be crucial for your analysis. Your research examines projections for a world opening up to trade for these farm exporting countries under a couple of different scenarios. Let's start with the bad scenario.
The bad scenario is partial liberalization of trade. The type of trade liberalization that happens toward one country, and that one country happens to have the type of forest that stores a lot of carbon, like Brazil. Now, suppose that the world opens up to trade in agriculture with only Brazil. Then in this case, what happens is that there are going to be a lot of incentives by agricultural producers in Brazil to export more to the rest of the world. Think about soybean. There's a lot of production of soybean that can happen in Brazil because Brazil is so good in soybean production. However, there are other countries that are also good at producing soybean, like the United States. Imagine you're a farmer in Brazil and your productivity has increased, perhaps because trade helps you be more productive. Now you can offer a little bit lower price of soybean to the rest of the world, like consumers in Europe or China, because the American soybean and the Brazilian soybean are close substitutes, then consumers in Europe or China are going to switch and shift their demand from US to Brazil. That creates a lot of incentives in Brazil for farmers to expand their agricultural land. That translates to more deforestation. So this is a bad scenario because the carbon density of the Amazon, the forest in Brazil, are so high, it is in fact extra bad for climate change. In this bad scenario, Borlaug's hypothesis doesn't happen.
The problem here is the partial trade liberalization. The world is opening up toward only Brazil's farm exports and not toward soybean exports from other countries, like the United States. But Brazil's massive increase in soybean production comes at the expense of really valuable tropical forests. And what the world gets back on climate from, say, reforestation in the United States due to U.S. soybean farmers producing less is just not as valuable as the Amazon. That is the bad scenario. Borlaug's hypothesis does not work. Is there a better scenario for trade in which Borlaug's hypothesis could work?
The good scenario is where major countries like the EU or China open up to trade in agriculture, not just with Brazil, but with many countries like the United States, African countries, Asia, Australia, etc. One key reason for why Borlaug's hypothesis can work in this situation is that the increase in demand for food from Brazil or from the US or from Africa is going to be quite limited. And so what happens is that if the increase in productivity of farmers in exporting countries is larger than the increase in demand, which is now quite limited, then we can end up saving land globally.
why does the increased demand for food from a place like Brazil end up being more limited in this good scenario? At the risk of getting really technical here, tell us a little more about how this could be different from the bad scenario case where the world only opened up to farmers from Brazil.
The reason is that in the Brazil example, there were a lot of incentives in Brazil to cut forest because there was some substitution between Brazilian soybean and American soybean, and that substitution was easy to do for customers. Here, because it's happening everywhere, the type of substitution that becomes relevant is not anymore substituting agricultural products from US with agricultural products from Brazil, but agricultural products overall with non-agricultural products like cars, electronics, and education.
With higher productivity and more efficiency, yes, people globally want a bit more food, but they also want more other stuff. They want goods like cars and electronics, and services like education. So while even a country like Brazil will produce and export more food than it does today, removing trade barriers has much less of an impact on deforestation. Increased land use is more spread out and not limited to forest-critical countries like Brazil. So removing trade barriers and increasing trade could save the forests and help prevent climate change. But again, as your research makes clear, what policymakers of big consuming countries need to watch out for is that they don't open up the trade in a discriminatory way that shifts farming onto lands that are most important for climate. Okay, Fareed, this is amazing. But like all economic models, your research is forced to only tackle a slice of the problem. Tell us about some of the limitations. What else do policymakers need to worry about that isn't being captured by your model?
As countries become richer, they may form a larger demand for meat products. And we know that meat production is a very land-intensive type of economic activity. In that case, you would expect to see even more deforestation. Agriculture is not the only thing that matters when it gets to deforestation. For example, logging also matters. For agriculture, you cut forests, the forest is gone, then you use the land for producing agriculture. But in logging activity, in fact, you want to keep some level of trees. So you want to regrow some amounts of trees to keep your business going. Another consideration is the political economy aspect of this problem. How countries in the coming decades are going to act on the climate agenda, whether they are going to set carbon prices, whether they are going to be low carbon prices or high carbon prices. And so these domestic environmental policies that countries may adopt or not can also play an important role, and whether the way that they do so is a reaction to trade agreements in agriculture, I think is an important aspect of the problem. Lastly, I think beyond custom benefit analysis that we did, we are all humans, and there are other things that we may care. And in this case, it's the issue of biodiversity, that some of the species of animal and plants, when deforestation happens, may go extinct. And that's irreversible. It's a hard thing to put a number on, but I think that's something that we should also consider.
This is such an important area, and there are a lot of moving parts. If you wanted to leave policymakers with one big lesson from your research, what would it be?
The main takeaway of my research is a call for multilateral trade agreement in the area of agriculture. Because there can be a case with which we can gain a lot by having more trade in agriculture in terms of efficiency gains, and also we can minimize the impact on deforestation.
Fareed, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
To wrap things up, I wanted to highlight what I think is a big contribution of Fareed's research. There's a need to stress multilateral cooperation and the multilateral non-discriminatory reduction of trade barriers for food. Trade can be a potentially huge positive contributor both to global food security and to mitigate the effects of climate change, including by halting deforestation. But the type of change to trade policy, and hence trade flows, really matters. Selectively opening up to farm exports from only countries with really important tropical forests, like Brazil, Indonesia, and Congo, could lead to really perverse effects that end up harming the climate. The subtle point is that the world needs multilateral, non-discriminatory action, reducing trade barriers toward all of the agriculture exporting countries, to incentivize farming to be done in its most productive places, to get the amount of food the world needs, and to do so through the use of the least amount of land that would take away from climate-important forests. And of course, we need the right domestic policies as well, convincing countries to put a price on carbon emissions and to reward the benefits of carbon capture. And that is all for Trade Talks. A huge thanks to Fareed Farrokhi at Purdue University and currently visiting Princeton University. For more on trade and deforestation, do check out his paper with Heitor Pellegrina at the University of Notre Dame, as well as Elliot Kang and Sebastian Sotelo at the University of Michigan. The paper is titled Deforestation, A Global and Dynamic Perspective. On the importance of imported inputs and agricultural productivity, do check out Fareed's separate article published in the Journal of Political Economy titled Trade, Technology, and Agricultural Productivity. I will post links to the research on the episode page of the Trade Talks website. That is www.tradetalkspodcast.com. Thanks to Melina Kolb, our supervising producer. Thanks to Sarah Tu on digital. As always, thanks to Colin Warren, our audio guy. Do follow us on Twitter/X. We're on @trade_talks. That's not one, but two underscores, @trade_talks. Because when it comes to deforestation associated with trade with agriculture exporting countries, opening up to imports from two countries would be better than one.